This is Jennifer Stone with Stone's Throw. I want to read you a story I wrote long ago. It was one of my fictions. Yes, I tried to address the issue of color. Yes, I went from fact into fiction. It was all about the perception of Black America in the eyes of a little six-year-old girl. How do children see these things? Child's eyes. A child can see the tragic consequences of, well, what she knows is coming, yes. White America's shadow is funny. All of us, white, Black people of color, also colorless people, all of them take their cue from the costume. Anyway, I take my six-year-old vision of race. Race was unknown to me. It's just color. That's what I could see. I could see, and I knew. And, you know, I asked my mother what I should say to my nanny, I guess she was, when I introduced her, when I talked to her, and she said, they like to be called colored, that is, a colored woman or a colored man. Now, why that was so different in the 1930s, well, anyway, the famous Black scholar W.E.B. Du Bois, back in 1902, who he said that the problem of the 20th century would be the problem of the color line. And here it is, the 21st century, and what do you know? Great society is still spinning, still circling. We're kind of a salad, a cluster of others. Didn't melt. We just still define ourselves by our differences by the color of our skin. Back in 1865, Abraham Lincoln, you know, before he was eliminated, he hoped to do right by the freedmen, ex-slaves, I guess you could call them. Anyway, he knew that things would be rough for them. He thought that those who'd been fired from the plantations would need some support, you know, a nest egg or something, at least a cabin or something. And anyway, they called it Reconstruction. And it was really cruel. It was a dud. You remember the story about giving them 40 acres and, well, never mind, the mule. The Freedmen's Bureau was sad. There was no more use to the people than the government's promises to the Native Americans. Now, my story concerns the effects of Jim Crow. I couldn't begin to understand individual lives. But back in 1930s in Tucson, I was getting these feelings, Tucson, Arizona. Now, I am still not sure that what I saw, anything I saw, was true. Black lives matter then, as they did when the first captives arrived on the ships. Did anyone see the greatest crime in possibly in all human history, at least the greatest crime in the history of the United States? No one knew how long it would take for all of us to see it, let alone forget it. this is a story I wrote called Pepper Trees, all about what was happening to me at the time. Now, it is, as I said, a point at which fact meets a fiction. I can call it docu-dream. This was first published in 1977. one of our black poets at KPFA, Adam David Miller. He was quick to see my efforts. Before he died, he told me that he knew what I was trying to do. Shadows, foreshadows. Yes, black is beautiful. That's what inspired my middle school students in the late 1960s. Yes, posters everywhere. Black is beautiful. Who we were then foreshadowed who we are now. Anyway, later on, after the circles and the centuries in the history of men and the history of women, yes, they're all yet to be recognized. Well, a woman of color has come to the top. Our vice president, Kamala Harris, is the one I waited for. You know the song, the ones I waited for. And Barack Obama changed everything. Ah, black president. Barack Obama changed everything. And nothing. No thing at all. One step at a time, I say to myself. One step at a time. Depends on whether you're stepping into hell or no. It's got to be a win. It felt like a win when Barack Obama went to the White House. Really felt like, is it beauty? I don't know. Certainly better than Jack Kennedy, and I remember Jack and Jack Kennedy and Jackie. They were what I call, is it top of the wedding cake folks, you know, Cary Grant in the White House, but Barack Obama's elegance was something no one in, well, most people in this racist society weren't able to understand. James Baldwin told us not to expect very much. Don't expect a cosmopolitan society just because we have an erudite scholar, black scholar in the White House. I mean, even Europe is able to see the man or the woman inside this color costume. I was just relieved that there was no attempt to get rid of the man. He was something that the people who wanted to put him there, they wanted to believe in him. It's kind of like this messianic trend. We have to put all this stuff on our leaders. I mean, the president is just a bureaucrat, for God's sakes. This whole notion that he's supposed to be the leader, Christ's figure. Anyway, I want to read you my short story, Pepper Trees. It's a part of my memoir titled Over by the Caves. Now, Pepper Trees, yes. Who we were, what we knew. Slavery was only a memory for those who grew up in my world. My parents, yes, they grew up in Michigan and they left to settle in Tucson, open a sanitarium for people my father took care of. It was just before World War II. That changed everything. Sometimes I feel that those years happened to someone else. Perhaps they did. Give mystery to life, and you have reality in art. Now, I begin Pepper Trees with a little quote. I love little quotes at the top of the under the title, yes. Quote from W.E.B. Du Bois, his masterpiece of poetic prose, The Souls of Black Folk. I think that's the first book I would use in a Black Studies class. Of course, I probably shouldn't. Well, no. I think I probably had a point of view. Anyway, this quote is a kind of, what do we call that? A directive. I call it a directive. May have more to say about that when they finish the story, but it's a clue to tell you what I'm after here. Yes, Pepper Trees, The Souls of Black Folk by William E.B. Du Bois, he writes, "And who shall measure progress? There, where the dark-faced Josie lies." The smell and the shade of the pepper trees is the first thing to remember. The wide shade and the dry days and the Spanish tile, heavy awnings of the hacienda of my mother and my father. Brown Mexicans in white shirts make brown adobe brick walls and wash them white. The bricks are made of mud and straw. They pack them in wooden frames. From under the walls come horned toads to keep in little shoeboxes. Round reptiles with sandpaper soft bellies, loose chins, and eyes without water. All their little foreheads are crowned with thorns. They can spit blood from between their eyes. Nifty reptiles. Their eyes are the oldest I have ever seen. They have prehistoric perception. They know who I am. I take them on a shoestring, leash them up. I want them to eat the ants on the anthills near the pepper trees. Once I left one died there near the hill, a little anthill, yes. It was tied up there all night in the morning. She had been eaten. She got one of those reptile chills during the night, and she was cold-blooded and couldn't move much. So the ants ate her. I kept her babies in a jar. There were only two of them. They were less than an inch long. They were so delicate. My friend Nathaniel and I are almost ready to go to school. I already go to a place with bars and sand and finger paints. They play drop the handkerchief and some other circle games. But the teacher said that what I did was not the way to do it, so I didn't. Nathaniel and I kill other things besides the horny toads. We kill some unborn birds with a pipe and some kittens just born because we can't keep them. And we kill some rats, the wrong white rats, some too fat white rats, and smash them, and Nathaniel smashed them, but I helped. Once he frayed the ends of some electric wiring and plugged the cord in the wall. Tried to electrocute the rats, but they wouldn't die. None of the grown-ups found us. They didn't even talk until the sun went down. Then they gathered up and poured their drinks, and Nathaniel's mother said, "Oh, she's damn glad he was born in Boston and not in this desert." My mother says, "Well, anyway, I was conceived in Michigan, so I am not really a Westerner either. My father is in Arizona because sick people come to his clinic with arthritis and asthma, tuberculosis, and all the sickness people bring to a dry place. After it gets dark, everyone talks and drinks, sits in canvas hammocks or porch swings. We put on the lights over the tennis court. I give plays on the tennis court. Under those lights, Nathaniel is in the tiger cage, in a tiger costume, roaring and screaming and knocking the cage over, breaking it. It is the best packing crate cage I've ever had for my stage. Oh, but it ruins my play when it falls down and breaks, and my mother says, oh, well, what a hell of a hullabaloo we are always making, but, well, we might as well have fun as long as we're kids. Always there is a pageant of me. They bring me costumes of Mexico with sequined snakes and embroidered blouses. I ride a burro. I am all done up in black and silver for the rodeo parade. Then I am Queen Elizabeth in a farthingale. I am mustard seed. I am Orphan Annie. Oh, there are a great many days and a great many plays. Our colored maid lives in the garage. She goes home to her husband, Big Sam, on weekends. Her name is Josie, my mother says. Josie takes some cosmetics and other things from my mother's dressing table, but oh, who can blame her in her circumstances? My mother also says Josie can't have any babies. My father, who fixes everything, takes Josie to his clinic for some minor surgery, he says, and she has all kinds of babies after that. She puts her little baby Sam in the washtub in the middle of the kitchen floor with my blonde baby brother. There is salt and pepper laughter from the grown-ups. How cute, they say, just like my Topsy and Eva doll, which has two heads, you know, no bottom, two heads. You just shake the skirt and turn it up side down to get the princess or the pickaninny. I think that doll I kept for years until it occurred to me that it was, an artifact. Let's call it an artifact, but I didn't want anybody to see it. Anyway, the pickaninny and the princess. Whenever my father builds a new room on the house, all of us, everyone, has to put a footprint in the floor. Josie doesn't want to put her foot in the wet cement of the foundation of my father's house. He has to chase her round and round the yard to catch her. And all the Indians and the Mexican workers watch the Irishman with the blue-black hair and the ice-blue eyes chase the tall black woman, carry her squealing and kicking to put her foot in the wet cement. Oh, black people are like cats, he says, how they hate anything wet because they have heavy bones, lots of calcium in their bones, so they sink in the water, so they hate it. Josie put her foot in the wet cement with her nylon stocking on. Then she went back to her room in the garage. One time, I had a circus in the laundry room. I left all sorts of animals there. Oh, I left a puppy in a wash tub all night with the tub boarded over. Josie found a mess in the morning. That time, she lost her temper with me. I was a little afraid because, after all, she wasn't my mother, so she shouldn't get mad at me that way. Then there is a dream about the tigers coming and coming to get me. Roaring, coming to get me. So my father takes his 12-gauge shotgun and shoots them through my bedroom window. In the morning, he takes me out on the desert and shows me where he buried them. I visit their graves sometimes. My father hunts ducks and doves. And deer, he takes me with him, and I get to pull the heads off the birds after he shoots them. Yes, soft little birds, doves, that way the birds die quick. And I put them in the pack on his back, and I always get lots of blood all over my yellow shirt, so my mother will be upset when I come home. Once, a rattlesnake bit me, a diamondback rattlesnake. My father shot its head off and cut open my leg to get the poison out. I just screamed and screamed. I don't remember how I got home. I just screamed. I know I kept the snake skin. I hung it on my bedroom wall with its rattles preserved forever. I made the vertebrae into bracelets. One winter, my father wants a swing that swings over the house. Now he has to dynamite the ground to make the post holes deep enough. Now, this is a Tarzan swing. Everyone has to try it. That same year, he had to take my tonsils out himself because the best doctor in Tucson couldn't do it right. Now, he paints the rumble seat in the car blue for me and calls everything by my name and paints it blue. He let me ride on the running board when my mother didn't see. He builds a handball court, but it is too late because the school has started. I am trying to be a girl, but that is not his fault, of course. There was a time in 1939, my mother's lover came to stay with us. Oh, she told me about it, and he got away, and I never found him. One night, it was the 4th of July, Festival of Independence. My father set off rockets and pinwheels and Roman candles all evening. Oh, neon night, I watched and watched, and I let my little brother hold my sparkler. I told him the story of the little match girl, but he did not listen. I stayed up past midnight. I had to be carried to bed. My eyes were burning with the lights of all the fireworks. And when I got into bed, I saw a great bonfire on the lawn outside my window. And there was my father and Big Sam and my mother's lover and my brother and Nathaniel with all the others. And they were having a tug of war with a long and twisted rope. First, one man fell down. Then another man fell down until finally, at last, Big Sam won. He said he had to win because there were just too many babies at his house and always more and more, and he could not stand it anymore. So they all went to the garage. They told Josie to give back the cosmetics and the perfume to my mother because it was her turn, Josie's turn. Not my mother's turn, not yet. Then they made a rope swing for Josie in the biggest pepper tree, and she hung there alone. The wooden beams in the ceiling of our house are all on fire, burning like logs in the fireplace. Just before that moment, they collapse into ashes. My mother and Nathaniel's mother just sit there. They just talk, smoke their cigarettes. I beg them to come out of the house, get Josie down from the biggest pepper tree, because that is the tree that is near the anthill. She will get a chill before morning. I tell them she is hanging there from the rope of the fathers. My mother is laughing, hushing me. Oh, yes, dear, she said. Yes, she will come and see. She will come outside and watch my play. Just as soon as she finishes this drink. That's a story called Pepper Trees, to be found in a collection called Over by the Caves, first published in 1977. It was a time when it was very difficult to talk about race, you know, a clear, concrete way to use the right terms. I think, you know, Du Bois had it right. Problem of the 20th century is the color line. 21st century, right, here we go again and again and again. Aha, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. They did then, yes. They did then and they do now. The great crime of the past is ever here. The past is always present. This is it. The inheritance of the, let's call it the white folks. They had something passed down, something, a little something. Maybe not the 40 acres, but something passed down. Whereas Black Americans had absolutely nothing. They could be sharecroppers. Anyway, you know the story. You know the story, and it's still going on. Oh, yes, Black is beautiful. Black is beautiful. I think that this story, when I first published it, helped a lot of people I know get the picture. I think it's part of a series of what I call those docudreams. Next time, I'll read you another one. In the meantime, I have a show, a regular old show, on KPFA on the fourth Tuesday, 2:30 in the afternoon. That's me. This has been Jennifer Stone with Stone's Throw. Till next time, go easy, and if you can't go easy, go as easy as you can.